For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Good morning. Oh, so I am Aishin Nancy Easton, and Tigan is sick today with a cold, so I am giving the talk, and as a result, it is my first talk without real notes. I do have a post-it note, but that's about it. But that doesn't mean that I haven't done some research, because, and you all have done some research too, actually, because what I'm going to be talking about today is Zazen. So this room is filled with lots and lots and lots of research, field research, as well as some scholarly research. So, you know, I just gave Zazen instruction to two people who are joining us for, if not the first time, then close to the first time. And so it was a great reminder for me about, you know, things about our posture and things about our attitude and, you know, an opportunity to sort of reflect on, you know, what are we doing when we come here and we sit? You know, why do we do this? And what is it exactly that we're doing? So I want to share a little bit and maybe read a little bit from Suzuki Roshi, and then maybe we can all have a discussion. What is that, a consortium, if we've all, you know, if we're all researchers and we're contributing? So anyway, I'll leave off with that metaphor. So, you know, when we come here, we come here and we silently face the wall, and we're here. You know, something brought each of us to practice. And for each person, that was, you know, maybe their own question. Maybe it's a question that that you don't even know exactly what it is, you know, when you start. But over time, you come to recognize, you know, oh, okay, that was what I wanted when I started this. And we learn a bunch of, you know, postures and ways of holding ourselves and things to do with our mind. And, you know, and we, if you're like me, maybe not everybody does this, we have a lot of thoughts going through our head about, you know, what am I doing this right? What am I doing? Is it really supposed to be like this? I must be doing it wrong. But, you know, I think those are all good questions, and I'm not going to answer them, at least not yet. So, you know, we have a posture that we sit in Zazen. For me, I like to sit in the Burmese posture. That works the best for me. I see a number of people in the Seiza posture. I see a number of people in chairs. I don't see anybody in full lotus today, but I know there's at least one person here who does that. And for Dharma talk especially, take a posture that's relaxed for you. But for Zazen, we try to find a posture that is supportive of our back and supportive of our mind. So we tend to take postures that are, you know, a little contained, where if we're You don't have to do this while I'm saying it. It's really okay to sit however you want to sit. If we're sitting in a chair, you know, when we're sitting Zazen, maybe we put both feet flat firmly on the ground and we, you know, try to sit upright. And if we're sitting on our cushions, we maybe try to have our knees on the cushion or on the zabaton, and we're a little bit contained. And the idea is really you want to have a nice base so that you can sit upright in such a way that you're not having to use a lot of back muscles or abdominal muscles. So, you know, sometimes it helps, I think, if you sit down to just sort of lean forward, lean back, you know, lean from side to side. And at some point, you're going to find something that feels like the center, at least for right then. And we're, you know, we have our hands in a mudra, which also helps to, that helps to support our upright sitting. If we have our hands in our, on our laps, we can sometimes lean a little forward. But we have our hands in this mudra, and it's not, you can feel, you know, how relaxed your shoulders are when you are in this mudra. And we're, you know, gazing forward. Our facial muscles are relaxed because this is a lot of, even though it doesn't seem like we're relaxed, a lot about Zazen is trying to relax. We relax our mind in a supported way, you know, our bodies and our minds. So we're relaxing our facial muscles, you know, breathing through your nose. You don't have to clench your teeth. Just sit in a way that your face feels comfortable. And we're, you know, looking forward. Generally, we're looking at a wall, so there's not much to see. But even if we're not looking at a wall, you know, we're kind of not looking at anything. People talk about, you know, sort of a soft gaze where we let our eyes drop and just let our eye muscles kind of loosen up, so that we're not trying to, and we're letting our minds do this as well. We're not trying to make sense of what's going on in front of us, which is why sitting and facing a wall can be very helpful. It reduces the stimulation, and it lets you relax in some important ways. And so, you know, maybe it's, you kind of let your eyes go out of focus, so you're not really looking at anything, but we're here, you know, and we're alert, and we're able to breathe freely because we're sitting upright, you know, so you're able to breathe normally and take a nice full breath. You don't have to do anything special with your breath, but we're using our breath as something that we can pay attention to, something that as we become a little distracted, maybe by things that we can hear or feelings or sensations that we're having or thoughts especially in our minds, we can use our breath as something that we can come back to because it's always there. And actually, I've always thought that, you know, when we're breathing, we're really interacting with things that seem to be outside ourselves. You know, we're kind of, I think, you know, Suzuki Roshi talks about your breath as like a swinging door. You know, it swings in and then it swings out. And it's one part of ourselves, one important part of ourselves where the boundaries between what's outside and what's inside is a little less distinct. So I think for that way it's helpful too. But it's also something that is continuing to happen, and it's something that you can readily connect with. You know, we might, if we're really feeling distracted, we might do, you know, engage in breath counting or even just paying attention to, you know, being aware that you're breathing in and being aware that you're breathing out. And what we're really trying to do in Zazen is really to just be present. We're just present with whatever seems to be out there and whatever seems to be in here. And that includes our thoughts. We're not thinking about anything in particular, but we're not thinking about anything. We're, you know, thoughts are just the same way that, you know, your stomach is secreting digestive juices and your eyes are, you know, sort of taking in sights. Our minds are producing thoughts, and because that's what they do. And we're not trying to get rid of our thoughts, but we're maybe trying to relate to them a little bit differently. We are allowing them to happen, and they're gonna happen. So if we are taking an attitude towards our zazen of, you know, I need to just be present and just be here and not have any thoughts, we're going to feel really frustrated pretty quickly and in a semi-permanent basis until we can relax with that a little bit, you know, and just let thoughts happen. The idea on paper is to let go of your thoughts. You know, when you recognize that you're having a thought, you let go of it, and you come back to your breathing. And that is what we do. But I think that something else is happening as well, that we're not doing it and we're not doing it. But I think we can't help but do it, which is that sometimes we're going to engage with a thought and we're going to relate to that thought for a little while, and we're going to maybe have another thought about that thought, like, oh, that thing that I thought was happening earlier, now that I'm a little distanced from it and I'm a little more relaxed, it doesn't seem like that thing that I thought was happening earlier was really happening at all. You know, I think actually maybe, you know, we can kind of change our minds about some things. So, you know, maybe we had an argument with someone earlier and it seemed like, you know, very much one way while we were having it. And then we come and we sit, and this is just an example, but maybe we're sitting and you know, kind of fuming, and maybe after a little while our anger wears down, and whatever it was that was behind that argument has you know, changed and dissipated, and we maybe see it a little differently. And that's fine. And then we can come back to our breathing, and just, you know, refresh and come back to let that, you know, little thought or insight go too, and just, you know, come back to our breathing. And, you know, maybe we had a different thought about something that happened, and maybe that thought was right, maybe it wasn't. We're not going to think about it, you know. It's just sort of stuff that continues to evolve. But I think that is something that does happen through practice over time, is that we're not trying to do this and we're not doing it, but sometimes practice does, you know, kind of just work things out a little bit, and it changes our minds. So, you know, we talk about we are doing zazen, but I think there's a very real way in which zazen is doing us. The fact of you know, coming and sitting and calming down and letting go of some things, as we continue to practice that, it does change us. But we don't want to get too attached to that either, because we were fine before. Okay, because that's you know, one of the main messages of Buddhism, is that all beings, all of us, and all the beings that we are aware of are endowed with Buddha nature from the very beginning. You know, so even that argument that you were having with someone earlier, maybe, as to extend my example, you still had Buddha nature back then, you know? Maybe you had a little bit more confusion at that moment, or you had just a little bit more, you know, agitation. Maybe you were stuck in traffic before that argument, and that was weighing on you. There's lots of things. We were fine before, and through practicing, we are changing in a way that maybe can be helpful to us. Maybe it's something that can help us to, you know, be a little more calm, be a little kinder to ourselves and to others around us. And maybe it's something that, you know, can help us to learn to relate to ourselves and others in a different way. Suzuki Roshi talks about this as becoming ourselves. And I think that that is true. I'm going to read you a little bit from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind in a minute. But as you sit, period after period, moment after moment, you really start to just, you know, become yourself. As we let go of a lot of different thoughts and a lot of different feelings or sensations or memories, and we learn to practice with those and gain a little bit of distance, we just become more of ourselves. Whatever that means, because I don't even think I fully know what that means, but I believe it's true. So what I want to really say is we're not really trying to do anything special. We're here and it feels how it feels. You know, sometimes it feels great and we're feeling like, okay, I'm doing this, you know, and I can really have a thought of like, okay, I'm doing this right now. And, you know, the next minute we can feel like, what was I thinking? This was, you know, this is a big mistake, or this is boring, or I don't like this, or I wish I was doing something else. All of that is okay, you know. So part of what we're doing as we sit is we're just developing some patience. We're developing some tolerance for ambiguity. That, you know, if we can recognize that one minute I feel one way and the next minute I feel the next, and a lot of things that I thought were one way, really now they seem like they're a different way, that you get a little bit of tolerance for ambiguity. And we learn to, you know, let go of those things and recognize all the ways in which we and those around us are changing. And the more we can recognize that, I think the more we can respond effectively to other things in our world. We, as I like to tell people, you know, we don't have so much control over the things that come at us. But as we practice, we do have a little bit of control over how we respond. You know, we can take a moment and pause and just sort of breathe, you know, or relax for a moment, whatever works for you, and then respond. So I think that might be part of how we become ourselves. But I want to read a little from Suzuki Roshi for you, from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And this is a chapter in the section on right attitude. So this is about your attitude towards Zazen. And he is commenting on a very famous koan about polishing a tile. I'll just read it for you. And he uses slightly different names for the people in the koan than you may have heard, but I'm going to read it the way he says it. So he says, Basso was a famous Zen master called the Horse Master. He was the disciple of Nangaku, one of the six patriarch's disciples. One day, while he was studying under Nangaku, Basso was sitting, practicing Zazen. He was a man of large physical build. When he talked, his tongue reached to his nose. His voice was loud, and his Zazen must have been very good. Nangaku saw him sitting like a great mountain or like a frog. Nangaku asked, "What are you doing?" "I am practicing Zazen," Basso replied. "Why are you practicing Zazen?" "I want to attain enlightenment. I want to be a Buddha," the disciple said. "Do you know what the teacher did?" "He picked up a tile and he started to polish it." In Japan, after taking a tile from the kiln, we polish it to give it a beautiful finish. So Nangaku picked up a tile and started to polish it. Basso, his disciple, asked, "What are you doing?" "I want to make this tile into a jewel," Nangaku said. "How is it possible to make a tile a jewel?" Basso asked. "How is it possible to become a Buddha by practicing Zazen?" Nangaku replied. "Do you want to attain Buddhahood?" "There is no Buddhahood besides your ordinary mind." "When a cart does not go, which do you whip, the cart or the horse?" the master asked. Nangaku's meaning here is that whatever you do, that is Zazen. True zazen is beyond being in bed or sitting in the zendo. If your husband or wife is in bed, that is zazen. If you think, I am sitting here and my spouse is in bed, then even though you are sitting here in the cross-legged position, that is not true zazen. You should be like a frog always. That is true zazen. So he was talking earlier, before I read this to you, about thinking that we're good because we're here and we're practicing and others are not. And so he's really just talking about, you know, don't compare yourself to your spouse who's home in bed, you know, and think that you're good because you're here in the temple. He suggested that we try to be like a frog. A frog, and it could be anything, okay? But he chose a frog. A frog is one with its surroundings. When it's sitting, it's sitting. When it's, you know, jumping in the water, it's jumping in the water, and that's it. So that's what he means about be like a frog always. So he says, if we are like a frog, we are always ourselves. But even a frog sometimes loses himself, and he makes a sour face. And if something comes along, he will snap at it and eat it. So I think a frog is always addressing himself. I think you should do that also. Even in zazen, you will lose yourself. When you become sleepy or when your mind starts to wander about, you lose yourself. When your legs become painful, why are my legs so painful? You lose yourself. Because you lose yourself, your problem will be a problem for you. If you do not lose yourself, then even though you have difficulty, there is actually no problem whatsoever. You just sit in the midst of the problem when you are a part of the problem or when the problem is part of you. There is no problem because you are the problem itself. The problem is you yourself. If this is so, there is no problem. When your life is always a part of your surroundings, in other words, when you are called back to yourself in the present moment, then there is no problem. When you start to wander about in some delusion, which is something apart from you yourself, then your surroundings are not real anymore, and your mind is not real anymore. If you yourself are deluded, then your surroundings are also a misty, foggy delusion. Once you are in the midst of delusion, there is no end to delusion. You will be involved in deluded ideas one after another. Most people live in delusion, involved in their problem, trying to solve their problem. But just to live is actually to live in problems, and to solve the problem is to be a part of it, to be one with it. So he's talking about just be with what's going on. It doesn't mean that we have to agree with what's going on, and it doesn't mean that we have to go along with what's going on. Sometimes being with what's going on involves protesting about, you know, something that's going on. But we can do this with the mind of zazen, with the mind that is, you know, present and alert and aware and aware, you know, aware of what we're doing. So, before we had this talk, we had our zazen period, and then we had 10 minutes of kinhin, or walking meditation. And I always like to tell people that kinhin is a time when we can bring that mind that we've been cultivating through our zazen practice to just moving around. You know, we don't have to just be sitting to have a zazen mind. We can walk around. We walk around very slowly and mindfully, and just paying attention to where we are and how it feels to be walking around. And after this talk, we will have our, a brief work period where we spend maybe 15 or 20 minutes doing some temple cleaning or maintenance on the temple. And that's really an opportunity to bring our zazen mind to an activity. So, you know, we can't follow all of you through all of your daily activities and your job and, you know, going to work and sitting in traffic, but you can take this zazen mind that you have been cultivating and bring it to all those activities. So, you know, you can be you know, with your Zazen mind, sitting in traffic or, you know, working at a job or, you know, doing the dishes. Doing the dishes is one that I think we often like to sort of gloss over and, you know, try to pretend it's not happening, maybe think about something else or, you know, watch TV or, you know, find other ways to distract ourselves from what's happening. And yet we don't have to. You know, that's I think, a way that we can engage our Zazen mind in our lives is to not seek for things to distract ourselves from what's happening, but really just be there with what's happening. 'Cause there are lots of opportunities. So many opportunities, I'm not even going to give an example. So I want to open this up for discussion. But maybe what I've said is enough, but I think the one thing I want to add in is that, you know, as we sit and, you know, wrestle with the posture and the pain in our back or our legs or our hearts, one thing that we really can do is to relate to all of those things kindly, you know, and relate to ourselves kindly. And if that means that, you know, if you feel like, I can't do this, I'm doing a horrible job at this, I'm a lousy Zen student, I'm, you know, I'm not doing this right, just be kind to yourself, you know, and maybe just sort of say, okay, you know what, that's one reality or one possibility, but maybe it's not that bad. You know, maybe you're doing okay, and maybe you know, maybe it takes the form of saying, "Hey, you know what? Don't force yourself into that really painful posture. That's not very kind to yourself. Maybe you can learn from the pain that you're having in this posture about what might help you feel more relaxed and comfortable next time." So you know, we don't have to sort of muscle our way through things. We can be kind, and we can change our posture, like Paul is changing her posture. You know, we can. There's always the possibility to change. So we don't have to force ourselves into some rigid mold of what it, you know, what we think it means to be doing Zazen. We can let what's actually happening, you know, and help us and support us in what it really means to do Zazen, which is to, you know, support yourself and support each other and relax together. And it's a lot easier to be kind to ourselves and others when we're relaxed. So I think that's all I'll say. Anybody have any comments or questions or data from your own studies? I think we've all done pilot studies. Miriam.
I've noticed how different it is sitting here from sitting home by yourself. I feel like I catch the silence from the other people. And that helps me.
Yeah. Yeah, you really feel it.
Yes,
yeah.
It's,
yeah, you know, it's funny, the way you said it, it almost sounds like background music. It's like the background, you know, when we're in our lives, we don't always know what's happening because we don't have background music like we do in the movies. But when you're here, you've got the background music of Zazen, which is complete silence.
Yes.
As a support.
The song of Simon Garfunkel, "Hello, Silence, My Offering."
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, thank you all.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, but you're also contributing to that silence. So other people are catching it from you too. We're all contagious. Thank you. Any other thoughts? Oh.
Yeah. I mean, in the said it was kind of at the last minute we had it, so. But I've been thinking about this everyday activity a lot lately too, because I find myself like trying to rush through everyday activity, like, and I'm having an idea of everyday activity that it's like all kind of boring and shortish, you know, and getting past it so I can get to like free time, this like container of like liberated time where I just could have fun. So this creates so much tension, you know, that this like rushing through stuff that you don't want to do and having your eyes sort of constantly toward this free, better time, you know. And so I appreciate just the idea of trying to relax, trying to be more present in, you know, washing the dishes or cleaning out the fridge or, you know, getting somewhere, commuting, all that stuff. Like, so, but it's a real challenge too, but just to like bring the spirit of this to all types of activities.
Mm-hmm. You kind of remind me of the one who is not busy. You know, we talk about how the finding the one who is not busy through our zazen and then bringing that to our activity. I think I'm not the first person to observe that sometimes when we're really, really busy, if we can sort of slow down and relax a little bit in the middle of it, we can actually get more done. Than when we're, you know, kind of fighting, almost fighting against it.
So the summer I've been a case study in that.
Okay.
Because in July, see, I just have a little break.
Yeah, yeah.
I work food, but it was totally a day that was stressful. There was a lot going, really hard stuff going on, and I had a big to-do list. And I had just planted this garden, and I needed to get the garden water, or else everything's going to die. Hot, I was all sweaty, and I had a call with some difficult thing. I gotta go get that, you know, I can't, gotta get the water. And I rushed down the steps, and, you know, the walkway goes like this. But I cut corners and stepped, you know, maybe steps, like two steps or something. And a combination of that and uneven ground and garden hose and my garden hose, all of those together. Big, you know, sideways crack, horrible sound. Oh, no. You know, it's just like, no! Because I was already, like, up to here with stress. And, you know, when people ask me, what did you do? You know, the two answers. One, my niece told me to tell people that I fell off a unicorn. It was better. And then the other thing is just the short answer is haste makes waste. You know, it's just like,
yeah.
Here with this, you know, I had to get so much done. Things were so stressful. And that inattention and that rushing that you're saying, like, you know, check off the list. You know, I could see the uneven things. I could see the hose. I knew, like, it was all there for me to be aware of.
Yeah.
But I wasn't aware of it. And since July 20th, I have been, like, you know, hindered in my ability to do my work, in my ability to come here, my ability to, like, from that one, you know, just not being there with the reality of what was going on. And so, you know, it's really awesome. And then coming today, this morning, I was like, I can't go because I have to wear shoes. I don't have any other shoes I can wear that are indoor shoes. Because the indoor slippers that I can wear back stuff. But they said, no, you need to wear something that's like supportive because I don't have to, you know, like I can't go. I'm not going to go. That's it. I don't think I will go this morning. No, because I can't. And it's like, well, no. If that's a problem, then we'll just have to deal with it. Mm-hmm. Because this is a minor temporary disability, and there's going to be people and I support that. So I had to kind of do this, like you're saying, be kind.
Yeah, I'm glad you came.
You know, like, well, if I were the greeter and somebody came in and had something that needed to be accommodated, I would be all over it.
Yep.
You know? Yep. And I had to kind of shift to both sides of it to think about it. And I still, you know, my shoes squeak and it's like I shouldn't be doing it or anything, you know, there's all that. But I'm really glad that I came. So, yeah.
I'm glad that you came too.
Rushing through really learning from, you know, what is now ending up to be like, you know, 3 months of not being able to rush.
Yeah.
So, and I do appreciate thinking. And it, there is something about sitting in here instead of
You know, if our practice can't accommodate our human condition, you know, if it can't be done by human beings, then it's useless. So I'm glad you came with your shoes. I also fell flat on my face twice in 1 week a couple weeks ago and kind of banged up my knee. The same reason, because I was hurrying and not paying attention. And you really pay attention right after that happens, you know? But then it wears off. Paula?
The thing I like, one of the things I like the most about our Zazen practice is there's a certain idea of trust or faith in the practice itself that we can find that frog-like way to be through the practice. That we don't really need anybody to tell us anything. We just need to sit. We have simple Zazen instructions. And then the rest of it is kind of a point of our own self-discovery to get to that place.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we could just sit and practice, we will experience what that frog experiences. Because it's our natural state of being. So, I'm only thinking about that because there seems to be a lot of emphasis in our culture lately on guided meditation.
Yeah.
And I agree with the Buddha that whatever works for someone is fine. So I don't think it's a bad thing. But for me personally, it seems so invasive to have someone always telling you what you should be experiencing when you meditate. And so I'm only bringing that up because it was on my mind.
Thank you. You're highlighting, I think, the need for studying the self. That you know, as Dogen says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. And thank you for highlighting that, because I didn't really think to emphasize that in talking about Zazen, but we do. We're studying ourselves all the time. And I think a mistake that I made early on was to take those very simple instructions and to feel like that's all that should be happening. And if there's anything more that's happening, then you're doing it wrong. But really, those simple instructions are like the trellis that, you know, the vine of our practice can grow up. But our practice is not the trellis, you know. It's all the stuff is happening other than, you know, the very simple instructions. But the very simple instructions are kind of like the essential thing that you need.
And the simple instructions, because simplicity does this in anything, even in art and all that. Simplicity has respect for the complexity of each experience. Do you know what I mean? Because all of us are actually very complex individual units. So the simplicity of that instruction allows for each one of us to experience that complexity.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautifully said.
This is why I don't like the guy. Because, like, I can't really know everything about you. Like, you and I have known each other for 8 years.
Yeah.
I can't know everything. And even people closest to us can't know every variable that's at work in our interior landscape at any given time. That's why people are constantly surprised with life, right?
Yeah.
I didn't expect that person to do that. I don't know what's there. You know? Because, so it says there's a humility there that I can't know any individual that well to tell them what should be good for them to do. But I could give them simple instructions on how to sit Zazen and have faith that within that practice, they're going to experience what they need in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that I've just been thinking about that a lot lately. So
thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Kind of bringing it up again.
Thank you for highlighting that whole area. Yeah. Arjenis.
For me, I think it was 1996. I was talking to a friend, and he said, you know, he invited me to a Buddhist, a Midwest Buddhist temple. And I went to a service. And it was really nice. I mean, I like to talk and everything. But it was no different than what I had experienced before, you know, like going to hear people talking and telling you and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was leaving, and this woman, are you coming back? And I said, well, I don't know if this is what I want, but it, you know, I was exploring. And she said, well, maybe you want to come earlier, because early in the morning, 8 o'clock, we had a seating. Mm-hmm. And I said, So I went to that, and it was different because then I was doing something. I wasn't hearing anything, I was just doing something, experiencing something myself. So, and I was going through some difficult time because that was probably in the 1990s. And one of the things that Chris said when we were singing will take care of you. And then this turn of mind, you know, we're talking after the meditation, you say, he said singing will take care of you. How is he going to do that? And I said to the person, I don't know. But the fact was that I felt this sense of peace and trust that I haven't felt before. So it was something that I was doing with myself. It's nothing else, but it was this trust and this sense of peace that I enjoyed the talk of earlier, but it didn't do that for me. It was something more like you were talking about, nobody had to tell you anything. It's just like you're experiencing it. So it was, then I found this is really what I wanted. You know, I didn't have to do with anything, you know. Then one of the cons that the priest said was, because at that time I was dealing with HIV, I was diagnosed in 87. And that was in the 90s, early 90s that I went to that. And there was this one, things are not what they seem, nor are they otherwise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, Nagarjuna. Things are not always as they seem, nor are they otherwise.
And you know, outside, there was so much talk about dying and illness. And this gave an opportunity to open a different door in which I can trust.
Yeah.
That everything all that's happening is true, and you're dying, and it's like, but there was a sense of peace and trust that you were mentioning that I felt that you opened a different window for me.
Yeah.
When all the other doors were closed. And that gave me some sense of, I can do this kind of thing. You know, that, yes, this may be happening, but I can find within myself this sense of trust.
Yeah.
And so that's my experience. So that's how I got my quote. Though I have to be honest, I don't practice as often as I probably would like to. But I know the benefit. I know the. To me, now it's not even faith. Or, you know, it's real.
Yeah.
But do I do it? No. Do I rush into things and follow things? I do. So, you know, I just have to be kind to myself and say, okay, today I'm here. You know, so, but thank you.
Thank you for highlighting that, the trust, you know, that's very just palpable.
Yeah.
you know, that we can connect with. Thank you. I think we maybe have time for one more comment. Or we could move on to announcements.